Thank you so much. Apologies.
Good afternoon, everybody. How are we today? A little bit of excitement there. So, top of all.
Maybe use this one's got the.
Okay. Yeah,
sure. Yeah. My bad.
Sorry. Okay, more excitement.
It's our first time.
So this is my third time speaking at this event, and it's really nice to see a lot of familiar faces as I look around, and thank you to some people who've come up from Kansai as well. So my topic today is going to be a little bit different to the other ones that I've spoken about before. You know, we primarily manage a lot of STRs, but today I'm going to be talking about boutique hotel investments. But before I start there, I just wanted to see, with a show of hands, how many people own a STR in Japan? We got a couple. How many people own a boutique hotel? All right, so yeah, great. So maybe we can change that following my presentation. So I'll get cracking. Okay, so we are Shiki Properties. We're 11 and a half years in operation. We got 46 staff, including the lovely two in the front row here, and a couple of offices, Kyoto and now Nagano. So we got two different parts of the business. We have the accommodation management side, Shiki Properties, where we manage 50 STRs and three boutique hotels for a total of 82 keys. Primarily our portfolio is in Kyoto, but we also manage some properties in Osaka and now Nagano as well. So we offer a fully integrated one-stop platform, things such as guest operations, front desk, housekeeping, owner reporting, asset management. And then we also have our real estate division. So we offer buy and sell side brokerage for international clientele. We do a lot of STR transactions, but lately we've been doing several hotel brokerage deals, including this year. And we also do a little bit of resi and commercial. The bulk of it is in Kyoto, some in Osaka, and now also some in Nagano. So before I kick on to the hotels, I just wanted to share a couple of photos of some of our most popular recent properties. So up the top, the property is called Ichinen. We opened this in the middle of December last year, and it's just come storming out of the block. So we've done 12 million in bookings in 4 months. It's booking extremely well, and we've had some really nice photos of this property, which has helped substantially as well. But just wanted to show you guys the vibe. This is the kind of quality that I think really works in Kyoto at the moment. And we've got the lovely Rotenburo there as well. If anyone remembers from last time, I was talking about how much that helps with reservations and ADR and things like that. And then on the bottom, the property is called Koju. This one is a larger property. I think it fits 8 or 9. And it's in the Higashiyama area. And this one's booking like absolute hotcakes as well. Opened 9 months ago, and we've done 24 million in revenue since then. It's one of our best, most popular properties. And both of these two are doing north of 9% yield, I believe, perhaps even slightly more than that. All right, so before I kick into the main part of the presentation, I just want to do a bit of a market update on the accommodation market. And Japan remains one of the world's hottest tourist destinations. So last year we did 42.7 million inbound visitors. It was the first time we went over the 40 million mark. Fantastic year last year. The visitors spent 9.5 trillion yen in spending, which is the third consecutive year that's gone up. And interestingly, 70% of that spend has been on accommodation and food. Whereas in the past, there was a larger proportion of the spend was going towards shopping. Now we're seeing more of the spend on experiences. So what does that mean? It means people are spending more money on their accommodation and they're looking for higher quality accommodation. So for this year, the JTB is projecting a slight decrease in inbound tourist numbers, 41.4 million, which would be minus 2.8%. And the main reason for that is some tensions with China, which kicked off around November, basically accounts for most of that. The spending is actually forecast to increase from last year. So basically, what does that mean? People are spending more. And it's often Western guests coming in, staying a bit longer with a little bit of a higher budget. So the takeaway at the bottom there is fewer visitors, higher spending, and you know, more opportunity for boutique investments. And I've collected a little bit of data on the right there about our STR guest nationality profile. So this is from 2026, and we'll see here at the top, Americans accounting for 23% of our STR guests. They come up at number one. Number two is my brethren from Australia, coming in at 15%, and then UK at 6%. So interestingly enough, we've got 44% of our STR guests coming from these three English-speaking markets. And the reason I wanted to show you this is later on we're going to have a look at a bunch of the hotels that we manage where the profile is quite different. Okay, so this is a graphic showing the number of inbound tourists over the last few years. You can see this huge growth coming out of COVID, the peak last year, and what we can call maybe a speed bump this year. We've got the government target of 60 million at 2030. It's looking like a bit of a challenge to hit it at this point in time, but we'll see how we go. And on this slide, I've collected the last 7 months of our operation, just to give you a feel for what the accommodation market's been doing during this time. So October was fantastic. We really banged it out of the park that month. And then November was looking pretty good, but during that month, we had the China tension kick off, and we already saw a little bit of impact. And December had more impact, and January was an absolute disaster. So it was some pretty challenging months there, December, January. And then we also had the Lunar New Year shift from January to February. So this is a year-on-year RevPAR comparison. So that's why it's pulled down January even further. February looks okay, but if you adjust out the Lunar New Year, both those months were quite challenging. Since that time, we've obviously had the Gulf conflict kick off, and I've got a nice slide on the next one about that. But that was February 28. Despite that, March was absolutely fantastic, and so was April. JTB says we're going to have a down year, but interestingly enough, our forward bookings are quite strong. So what's happened since the Gulf conflict kicked off? We obviously had a lot of flights shut down from the Middle East, and that really affected the ability of Europeans to come through to Japan. So I was panicking big time and checking cancellations, you know, five times a day. And of course, we did have some cancellations, but what happened was Japan has been positioned as a safe haven, you know, somewhere. And actually, it's gone up in a lot of people's eyes. So we had a lot of Korean, Southeast Asian travelers deciding to come to Japan, and that's absorbed the excess demand. So surprisingly, our bookings have actually gone up. We've booked 155% year-on-year in the last 5 weeks. So it's funny how things turn out sometimes. Okay, so I'm going to kick into the main part of the presentation now, which is going to be boutique hotel investment. So investing in STRs, you know, that's the core part of our business. It's a fantastic investment. The ticket price is reasonable. It's a really good way to enter the market. But it does have a few structural limits. So the first one is that it is quite difficult to get leverage for the STRs. It's not impossible, but it's pretty tough, particularly if you're a foreign investor. And so what happens there is basically if you want to invest, your 70 million will get you a 70 million asset, essentially. Number two, STRs have operational complexity. If you're trying to operate it on your own, geographically it can be quite challenging. If you used an experienced external operator, which would include a company like ours, that can help to manage the situation. They can get a little bit more efficiency in the operation. But if you have a standalone hotel, as you can imagine, there are additional efficiencies that you can get, which are quite difficult to replicate with a bunch of STRs. And number three, STR policy continues to develop globally, not just in Japan. So in Kyoto, we've really focused on the Machiya investments because I feel like the Machiya has a lot less risk around it. The government really understands that these properties have cultural value and they want to protect them. So for me, there's less risk in the Machiya investment. But globally, we've seen attitudes change of governments towards STRs. So that is something, there's a point of difference between a hotel and an STR there. So if you want to complement your STR portfolio, you can have a look at boutique hotels, which will allow you to add some leverage, structural efficiency, and scale for the long term. So basically, the bank looks at Machiya's STRs a little bit like a residential purchase. Often they're wooden structures, and the banks are hesitant to lend on these assets, particularly if they're older. So often you'll end up with 0% LTV. Yes, there's a lot of heritage value. No, the Japanese banks don't really see any value in that, unfortunately. So, like I was saying, 70 mil in, 70 mil asset is kind of how it usually works. And if you compare that to boutique hotels, you know, it's seen as commercial real estate. It's a going concern. The banks will lend against the cash flow there, but also the asset value. So you can use the property as security. So you should expect at least 50% LTV for a hotel investment. Maybe 60%, and if you're an experienced hotel investor, you can perhaps extract 70% or even more. So under this kind of scenario, 175 million might get you a 350 million asset. So the one thing to note is you do need 175 million to get involved. So this is just an example of what that looks like on the screen. Let's say you've got that 170 million. If you purchased some STR Machiyas, that would probably get you two very nice Machiyas, 170 million in for 170 million equity. If you went for the hotel investment and you got 50% LTV, that would get you 340 million of asset. And if you were able to negotiate 70% LTV, you could get almost 570 million. Worth of assets. Okay, so why is there an opportunity in boutique hotels? So the guest demands have changed a little bit. Like I was saying, the spend of the guests is going up a little bit. So they want larger rooms, you know, a little bit better quality, a little bit better service. So a lot of these old budget hotels and basic STRs, they're not really aligned with what the guests are looking for right now. You know, people have this nightly spend of 30,000 yen. There's a bit of a lack of demand there. So there's an opportunity to purchase some of these older properties and jazz them up a little bit, add some value. The second one is that construction costs are extremely high at the moment, thanks to the devaluation of the yen and inflation. So it's made investing in new boutique hotels quite uneconomical. Therefore, there's not that many small hotels popping up around the place. And the third one is a lot of the capital that's coming into Japan, of which there's still a lot coming in, it's really targeting this institutional size of 100 plus rooms. And therefore, these smaller assets, there's still an opportunity for investors to jump in there. But as we all know, opportunities don't last forever. So we should expect the same here. So next I've got a bit of a case study on the three of our hotels. And I should preface that I have changed a couple of the numbers just for privacy reasons, but basically the story is unchanged. So I'm just gonna go through each of the three hotels we manage. The first one is our flagship Shiki Suites Hotel. And this one's got 10 rooms. It's got the Kanshuku license. Last year we did 82.3% occupancy, which was fantastic. And this one has an ADR of just over 20,000 yen, ADR being the average daily rate. So we did approximately 47 million is the example, GOP for this hotel last year. So what is GOP? I've got it down the bottom there. It's gross operating profit. It's basically your revenue minus all of the operating costs. Operating costs are cleaning, OTA fees, payment processing, utility, linen, staff, internet, all the operating costs. But it's before you take away the management fee and the interest. So $47 million for this property, take away the management fee estimate, leaves you with a cap rate of 8.9%. That's the unlevered yield. And then once you remove the interest, we're looking at a levered return of 14.25% for this property. So I just want to touch on the guest nationality here, which is, I think, interesting. So at this 20,000 yen ADR, and for a room size of 28 square meters, we can see actually the domestic guests are number one here, so 16%. So it's a bit of a different profile to what we had for the STRs, and we're going to see that change as the room size and the ADR fluctuates. So interestingly, we have 48% Western and European guests at this property. Okay, so we're going to the second property. This one is Riverside Tofukuji. This is a management property. We've got 11 rooms. Rooms are a little bit smaller, so 22, 23 square meters. Occupancy, fantastic again, 82.6% last year, but the ADR is a bit lower, 12.6 thousand yen. It's a one rank lower quality of hotel, and the room size is a little bit smaller. The location is one station away, so it all means that the ADR is a little bit lower. So for this one, I've put the example purchase price at 350 million. The last one was 400, sorry. And we've got GOP of 29.5 million on this one. Remove the interest, and basically, so cap rate is 8.4%, but once you lever it up, it's 13.4%. And actually, I think the owners are doing actually a lot better than this because they developed it 7 or 8 years ago. But this is approximately what it might cost to go in and invest it in this sort of asset. So at 12.6 thousand yen ADR, we can see that the guest profile is very different. This time we got Japan clearly on top at 24%, and then China coming in at number two, actually. And overall, it's heavily weighted towards the Asian traveler with this sort of profile. Okay, so last one is the Torji Suites. This is our newest hotel, actually. We opened it in February 2026, mid-Feb. 11 rooms on this one. And the location is a little bit less central. It's down towards the Torji Pagoda. And this one's doing 49 million GOP projected for a cap rate of 10.1%. And levered up, that's a 16.8% cash yield on equity, which is fantastic. This is a projection, so you know we'll see where it goes. But the bookings here have been fantastic. We've done 24 million in bookings in the first 2 months. And very pleasingly, we've actually beat the budget for May, which is a third year budget. We've done it in the first year within 3 months. So it's going fantastically well. The room size is 42 to 44 square meters. I think that's really helping. And interestingly, you'll see that the profile is quite similar to the STRs here. So we've got the Americans coming in looking for that larger room with a little bit more budget. Okay, so I'll just quickly go through last few slides. But you know, should you build or should you buy? Well, at the moment, building is extremely expensive. We're looking at 0.5 million per square meter. And also on top of that, you know, it can take 2 to 4 years for a new build. There's labor shortages. And also this means that the lenders are a little bit nervous because there's some risk around. So if you compare that to buying, you can buy below replacement cost. You can buy a boutique hotel for somewhere between 330 million up to say a billion. And then obviously you can lever that up. The other good benefit is you can get your revenue faster. So I've got 6 to 9 months there, but we started getting revenue for Torji in 4.5 months. And this next slide is just showing what kind of benefits you can get from having more rooms in your hotel. So I've just compared 10-room hotel, 15-room hotel, 20-room hotel. A lot of the revenues and costs are linear, so particularly for this example. So it just goes up in a straight line. And things like, you know, the revenue, the OTA costs, the cleaning, the linen, the utilities, these roughly move in a straight line. But what doesn't move in a straight line is things like particularly front desk cost. You can see that the front desk cost is the same whether it's 10 rooms or 20 rooms. And also you get some efficiencies on the management fee that I'll explain on the next slide. But basically, at 10 rooms, you got a net GOP percentage of 50%. And that goes up to 61% in my example with the 20 rooms. So the GOP per room is also moving higher. On top of that, efficiencies you can get are you can use a management company. So if you're trying to run your 10-room boutique hotel yourself, you've got to hire a manager, you've got to have a lot of staff. If you use an operating company, they can assume the GM function and you can run this kind of small hotel without any GM. They can handle things like the recruitment, the training, the marketing, the systems, all that kind of thing. So the owner would just stay as the owner of the asset, possibly give some strategy, you know, very no need to do that either. But also they would not have to go on site, manage the property themselves. They can trust it to the management company. And usually as the hotel increases in size, the management fee goes down in terms of percentage, so you get some more efficiencies there as well. And the third way you can get efficiencies is by using a cluster. So if you have a 10-room hotel, it's a pretty small operation. If you have some SDRs positioned around the hotel, you can dilute your staffing costs, your marketing, back office, things like that. Now, that is still quite challenging for an individual investor to do. But if you use a company who's employing that strategy, and obviously we do employ this kind of strategy, you can extract some of the efficiencies that they're developing and reduce your the cost of management. So STR's great investment. It's a great entry point. It's a reasonable ticket price. But as you go along your investment journey, boutique hotels are certainly worth some consideration. You'll be able to use leverage, you can scale your operations, you can look at these cluster models. And at the moment, there's still some good opportunities in the market, but of course, the market doesn't stay the same forever. So thank you very much for your interest today. And I just wanted to summarize, I'm here today with our other staff, Ben and Yi, from the Nagano and Kyoto offices. Tomorrow they're going to be speaking about ski field investments and also managing complex Kyoto regulations at 3:30 tomorrow, so please show them some love in the breakout room. These are our socials up there. You can also get them from the QR code, and I'm happy to take some questions if there are any. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chai. Tracy's got a question. Hang on. We're starting with Tracy.
Thank you, Chai. My question is about the building acquisition. Are these already hotels, or have these been apartment blocks that have done conversion? That's for first question. Second question, is it simple lodging, like ryokan, like, and then room by room by room, or is it like regular ryokan licensing for the building?
Okay, so for the first one, actually, it's a good question. In Kyoto, you can't really do, it's very difficult to do conversions for fire reasons. So I think, you know, nothing's impossible, but it's very difficult. So these are all custom hotel build. They've all been designed to be hotels. So that probably covers that question. And the other one, it's Kanshuku license. So it's the business hotels license. It's the one license. Again, Kyoto, fun place. The regulations are super strict. So you can't get individual licenses and then have these corridors of public space and all this kind of thing. So you've got to go to the whole building, and the building's got to be a custom hotel.
Any more hands, questions? Yes, of course, it had to be the other side of the room, didn't it?
You talked about the hub model in your presentation, and I just wasn't clear. Is that something your company offers, or is that something you outsource to another company?
Yeah, so that's just the operational model. So as an individual investor, you could replicate that. You could buy a hotel. You could buy a bunch of short-term rentals. You could make a cluster. As a management company, we also employ that model. So we have some hotels that we rent. We have some hotels that we manage. Then we have a whole bunch of short-term rentals around that. So there's a lot of regulation in Kyoto, and you have to have some facilities within a certain distance. So you can kind of kill few birds with one stone, and you can get some efficiencies out of the front desk and all this kind of stuff. So if you can't do it as an investor, you can use a company who does it, and then they're getting some efficiencies, and hopefully that should come through in your fees.
Thank you.
Cool.
Yeah.
Can you kind of explain the difference between Kanshaku license and like a Ryokan license?
Yeah. So it's like simple lodging. So it's under the same scheme. It's under the Hotel Business Act, but it's different to the Minpaku license, for example. So the next step up is like hotel license, and it's just more strict. You have to have, for example, the first floor, you can't have any rooms. You have to have, it's just a lot more strict in terms of personnel. So the Kanshuku is just a bit more relaxed than the hotel license. So if you have something that's more simple, it's just an easier license. And the fire code is a little bit less, I think, so yeah.
Any more questions from the room? Any more hands? Yes, oh, from the stream. Okay, give me a sec.
So we got a question from the chat, which is, are you offering these as investments for individuals or for a group investment?
If somebody wanted to do it as a group, they'd probably have to arrange that themselves. We don't really do that scheme on our side. But yeah, so I would say mainly individual are our clients. But obviously, if somebody wanted to make a company and have a bunch of investors, they'd be free to do so on their side.
And tell you portfolio managers like ourselves, I'm sure Chai's company as well, we panic when people say, can you help me find other investors, and you organize us together, and then we have everybody has a different opinion on what to do when the aircon breaks, and it's a bit of a nightmare. So when people come in together as a group, it's a lot easier. All right, any more questions? If not, then we will take a 10-minute break. Thank you, Chai.
Okay, thank you, everybody.